from 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Just like that, final hour of the week of the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Edley's Barbecue, authentically Nashville, locally owned. You've heard of Nashville Hot Chicken. Edley's now serving Nashville-style hot pork every Friday. Two locations open now in 12 South and Sylvan Park. And great news, their East Nashville location, a fan favorite of those who love Edley's Barbecue and East Nashville. They're beginning the reopening process, and they are hiring. More good news. Edley's is hiring along with some other local businesses. And you can check out edleysbarbecue.com/jobs. to see about the openings at their new East Nashville location, the East Nashville location that is reopening. Chad Withrow, Paul Kuharski with you on this Friday. David Reed is the chairman of the board. Coming up in about 15 minutes, John McClain is going to join us to talk some NFL and NFL headlines with us for a couple of segments. But first in this hour, Paul, I wanted to talk about Burke Nyhill, the new president and CEO of the Titans. And you were out a week ago when the news came down about Steve Underwood. John McClain actually got Steve Underwood on during his segment with him to close out the week and sort of talked about his career. But I think for a lot of Titans fans out there, they know this is a big deal when you have a new CEO and president, but maybe don't understand exactly what that person does within the organization in serving the owner and serving the team in a number of different capacities. Certainly that's something Steve Underwood did very well for 40 years and serving the Adams family. So I guess the question is, who is Burke Nyhill and what type of role is he stepping into? And by the way, Burke Nyhill, you can hear later on today on 3HL on 104.5 The Zone.
Well, he's a lawyer who joined the team. I think it was 3 years ago, who will be, you know, at Amy Adams Strunk's side at league functions, league meetings, and the like. If he serves in the same capacity that Steve Underwood did, which I would imagine is the plan, and so would be her advisor and sounding board on big issues where she's voting on you know, big league matters, and then, you know, is the guy at the top in Nashville who you know, is funneling through the prominent issues, primarily non-football, regarding the stadium, regarding he's overseen the plan for this new building that's going up at St. Thomas Sports Park. Fans who are familiar with the facility, it's kind of where the first set of bleachers were as you walked in to go to a training camp practice. A big new building there that's going to totally change kind of the footprint for this team. That's kind of not kind of, that's absolutely run out of space. So he's been the overseer of that project, which is a big, big step for this team. Stadium issues to me are at the forefront now for them, renovating this building and ultimately a giant revamp that Amy Adams Strunk has talked to us about being something on the scale of what's gone on at Hard Rock Stadium, a retrofit where she's not going to ask the city for a new stadium, but obviously something big needs to happen with that building coming upon a 30-year birthday that needs to be done to bring it into the 2020s, the 2030s. And he'll, I imagine, be a central figure and liaison between the team and the city as those things go on. And in many ways, in terms of the team's relationship with the city, he'll be the face of the franchise when she's, you know, not able or needed to be. He's a much younger guy. I don't know him well, but I know him a little bit. Look forward to getting to know him. And I think from the little bit I've interacted with him, he's got a personality that is suited for it. Be interesting to see if he's a Steve Underwood type guy who's down in lines at Nissan Stadium, you know, trying to manage and monitor people getting through the turnstiles and stuff like that.
Well, and it's interesting to me, Paul, because we sort of had this discussion with Vanderbilt when they hired – they were going to go through the process of hiring an AD, right, when they decide that Candace Story Lee is going to be the interim and eventually the AD. Well, what is different about the person previous to Malcolm Turner and then a person serving in that role that works with the same administration and same board and same group, right? Is there anything they can really affect in terms of change that's needed? You talked about stadium issues. So when you talk about the NFL structure, specifically with the Titans, if Amy Adams Strunk is still the owner, she's clearly the one that makes the big decisions. So what can a person in Burke Nyholt's role really do to change things if they're still working for the same owner? Or is there anything? And I'm not saying that you need to change a lot of things that Amy Adams Strunk has done. She's been terrific. But my point is, whoever's serving in that role is still serving for the same owner. So are there things that you could expect change on, or is it just going to be a stylistic approach that may be different with a different person in that seat?
Well, I remember, heck, this was at my church when a new priest took over at a church that was running smoothly. And a very smart deacon who is head of a big publishing house, advised him, change. People are looking to you for change. Don't disappoint them. Now, that's different than change for change's sake. But Burke Nyholt has only been with the Titans since 2016. So you can look at it as a promotion from within, but he was brought in as an outsider. So he's certainly coming with new and fresh ideas compared to Steve Underwood, who's been tied with the family for, 40 years. So he's brought in, established a comfort level with Amy Adams Strunk to the point where she said, yes, this is the successor that maybe she was expecting him to be from the very start when he was brought in. But now has potential to bring new ideas, new energy, new attitude as a younger guy. Still working for the same ownership, absolutely, but not tied in any way to the old Bud Adams way of thinking, which Steve Underwood was bridging with Amy Adams Strunk. And she clearly is full of a new vim, vigor, energy, and has done almost everything right in terms of bringing the Titans into the modern era. And I would think that he will be a facilitator of that, because the people that she's brought in, for the most part, seem to have done that. And Gil Beverly, as an example, and I know maybe there are some mixed feelings about him in-house because he is that outsider. And there's so many people who have been in their positions for so long. But from my vantage point, he's been what they need and have needed for some time, is some kind of outside thinking and change. And I don't know the inner workings of everything, but from what I've seen of what he's brought, it's been different without turning things upside down for no reason. Maybe there's more to that than I know. Obviously, I'm not on the inside. But I would imagine that Burke Nyholt is going to bring some of those same things in a, not in a lightning bolt kind of way, but in a gradual storm kind of way.
Paul, you mentioned stadium is going to be at the forefront of whatever issues Burke Nyholt faces moving forward. That's top of the list. When you say that, what do you mean specifically about the stadium being the top of the list issue for the Titans in Burke Nyholt?
Well, look, the stadium. I'm not a huge proponent of the stadium being, I don't think the stadium's as bad as a lot of people think it is, because for me, the stadium experience is give me a seat with a good sight line to a good field. And Nissan Stadium accomplishes that to me. All right. And I don't want the price to be sky high because you've created a palace. Now, a lot of people disagree with that, and they want Jerry World, or they want Mercedes-Benz Stadium from Atlanta with all the bells and whistles. Though, when we were in Atlanta, we noticed that all the premium seats were empty based on the price of those premium seats. Titans are going to meet this thing somewhere in the middle. Amy Adams Strunk made it clear in conversations I had with her, and then in a conversation that Hutton and I had with her in Canton, that she is not asking for a new stadium. She's not going to ask for a new stadium, and that she does see a lot of appeal in the way Miami dealt with Hard Rock Stadium in some kind of retrofitting of a building where the guts of the building are fine and the bowl of the stadium is fine. But they need more space in there to create things that draw you in maybe well before kickoff so you don't have huge entry problems and the like. In Miami, the big thing was shade, right? They put those huge awnings as part of it to create shade. I don't know what the huge fundamental issue is for the Titans. Maybe it's as simple as space for beer gardens and cocktail parties pregame, and certainly doing away with the dollhouses that people have talked about. And I think the end of their lifespan is coming sooner rather than later. But the Titans have to come up with a plan for what the new, quote-unquote, new version of Nissan Stadium is going to be, and plot it with the city and fund it with the city. And I think Burke Nyhill is going to be a guy at the forefront of that. He just planned and executed what their new building is going to be on their campus, and I would think it's logical that he – I mean, that position as the head of the organization, as the CEO, is the guy who would be at the forefront of the Titans' end of planning that stadium retrofitting, for lack of a better term.
We'll continue our NFL discussion with John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. That is next. This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
Sportsline.com's Alan Bell talks Titans and the NFL with a 3HL. Presented by Smooth Moving and Storage. Tuesdays at 4:15 on 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back to the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Authentically Nashville, locally owned, Edley's Barbecue, edleysbbq.com, the website. Chad Withrow, Paul Kuharski with you. David Reed, our chairman of the board, our producer. We're going to be joined by John McClain here in just a moment. But first, Paul, some news coming down during the break on times for Titans preseason games. What can you tell us?
Yeah, they finalized that schedule, provided things go according to plan. We don't know if you'll be allowed in the building or not, but if they play according to plan, preseason opener Saturday, August 15th at Washington. That'll be a 1 o'clock kickoff. All these games are on WKRN. So open on Saturday the 15th, 1 o'clock. Central, Saturday, the 22nd of August, the Giants here. That's a 7 o'clock start. Saturday, a week later, the 29th of August, Tampa Bay on the road. That's 6 p.m. start. That, to me, is the game that will most likely be preceded by training camp work together. John Robinson and Jason Light, the two GMs, friends. Robinson worked under Light down there, and that's where he was hired from. The finale on a short week, Thursday, September 3rd, Chicago here, and that's a 7 o'clock start, also on WKRN. So the two home games, Saturday the 22nd against the Giants at 7 o'clock, Thursday, September 3rd, Bears here at 7 o'clock. I don't know if Vrabel said he was open to two get-togethers during training camp in the preseason, if things allowed for it. I don't see any automatic connection. He doesn't. Joe Judge with the Patriots didn't overlap with Vrabel there, so I don't know out of Washington, the Giants, or Chicago, what the logical or natural connection is. It may be just somebody reaching out, but Tampa Bay is an obvious one.
John McClain from the Houston Chronicle joins us every Tuesday and Friday on the show, and he is with us now. John, how are things in Houston?
Everything's great, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. I want to start with this, John. You kind of said this in passing, but you said it definitively on the show on Tuesday about Bud Adams' desire to call the team the Pioneers and not the Titans. That quote got picked up by a few people. Mike Keith was actually asked about it today on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone, and he basically confirmed what you said, that Bud Adams really liked that name more than anyone else, including the league, and that he could confirm that, in fact, Bud Adams did love that name. Did you know that story at the time that it was happening? And it's certainly caused quite a stir with Titans fans out here, and they're feeling like they dodged a bullet that the team's not named the Pioneers.
Yeah, I wrote it at the time, talked about it on the radio. It was a big deal here. It was a big deal up there, but I guess people don't remember it as much because I don't think it got a lot of run up there. But he wanted Pioneers. The league was ready to go with Pioneers, and I think it got out. I don't remember if it was the Memphis Commercial Appeal or Memphis Talk Show. I can't remember. Somewhere in Memphis, and Bud wanted to keep it quiet, make it a big surprise, so he went with number two, which was the Titans.
It's fascinating, and then you even wrote about it at the time. But, it's gotten a big response. Something else gotten a big response has been James Harrison appearing on the Going Deep podcast, where he was asked about his biggest fine he received during his career. It was a $75,000 fine for a hit on Muhammad Massaquah of the Browns in 2010. And what has people talking, John, is that Harrison said that Mike Tomlin then handed him an envelope of money after the NFL levied that fine. What do you think about this story and James Harrison and Mike Tomlin and the Steelers?
Well, first of all, Cadillac, I think that when I read the story originally, it was clear he meant that Tomlin was helping him offset the fine with an envelope. It had to be a big envelope to have $75,000 in it. So he didn't say what size envelope it was. So I doubt it's coming out of Tomlin's pocket. Probably came from the Steelers. And then there were a lot of people that took it to mean that Tomlin was paying him a bounty for hitting somebody hard, which he tried to clarify today. And, of course, the Steelers owner said Tomlin didn't do that, but I don't think he made it up. And but I don't think for a minute it was a bounty. I think he was trying to help the guy pay his fine, and it was against the league rules for players to do that. But of course, then I mean, for anybody with a team to do that for a player when they're fined by the league, but there's not anything the league's going to do to the player for something that happened 10 years ago.
Sean Payton was pretty outspoken about that, based on having suffered for Bountygate and sitting out a year, losing a year's salary. Was on the radio, I think, with Lock M4 and said, there's no way they're going to look into that. That his wasn't so much that so much time had passed, but that the league's not interested in such a story as compared to how it was interested in his. What'd you think of that?
I thought that was pretty stupid statement. His was pertinent. It was when it happened. Greg Williams was involved. They had Greg on audio for the crew that was over there filming a Steve Gleason story, and they were in a room when Greg said about going for the ACL and talking about where the ACL is and all that. They had that on tape, and that was a huge story. Where this one's 10 years later, and I think Peyton's still very bitter about his team getting caught and him getting suspended for that season. He came across to me like a little pouty Pete.
Phone lines are open. If you want to jump in, any NFL question for John McClain, fair game, 615-737-1045, 737-1045. John, Logan Ryan appeared on Good Morning Football earlier this week on NFL Network, said he's considering every team that's not the Titans because the Titans didn't even offer to re-sign him. But specifically talked about the New York Jets and the report out there about they're close to signing him. Another possible team that's been mentioned has been the Dolphins. What do you think about Logan Ryan at this point in his career and the possible fit with either one of those former AFC East rivals of his old team, the Patriots?
Yeah, at this point in his career, cornerback, he's 32, right? 32-year-old cornerback. He's not going to get big money. He's going to have to go where he can get the most money, because it'll be, in all likelihood, his last contract. So I'm assuming when Ryan does sign, it will be for the best deal he can possibly get financially, whether it's the Jets or the Dolphins. You know, he knows the Dolphins coaches. That might be the best place to go for him. They shouldn't be as good as the Jets. The Jets got their quarterback in place in Adam Gase's second season. So I don't see either one of them being a threat to win the division. But if I'm him, you know, if I had a choice of where to live, I'd rather live in South Florida. But I think it'll come down to money, as most contracts do.
Are any Texans together now? We talked to Johnny Smith last week here, who's just coincidentally also in South Florida. Ryan Tannehill's down there. They get together a few times a week and work out. We know Lamar Jackson's with Hollywood Brown. They're also in South Florida. They're working out. I would think these combinations have a real chance to have a real advantage if and when games start from having worked route trees and stuff together. And I imagine there are combinations scattered around the country who are going to be very popular fantasy selections.
There are players who are working out together here, mainly doing the physical training of it. Bunch, especially the receivers with DeAndre Hopkins. They have a place where they've showed on Instagram that they're working out, but everybody else is working out at home. And I think the players believe they're going to be able to get back in their facilities in June and start working because the virtual program has been extended through the end of the month. But I don't have any idea about everybody. I know Deshaun Watson's moved around some working with different players, but I don't know about all of them because we can't communicate with most of them.
Phone lines are open for your NFL questions for John McClain, one of the two chances you get all week to talk to a legend, the general himself, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. All questions, fair game, except if you ask what was the name of his former band. He will not answer that. Everything else he'll answer for you at 615-737-1045, 737-1045. Your phone calls for John McClain next. This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
The Zone thanks all first responders and their efforts towards the COVID-19 pandemic.
I want to thank all the nurses and doctors out there in hospitals around the country.
You're the real MVPs.
You know, leave their family in their house while they going weeks and weeks trying to help us and keep us safe. That's amazing.
104.5, The Zone. The Zone. The Zone.
It's the Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Edley's Barbecue, authentically Nashville, locally owned. Also owners of Poncho and Lefty's Cantina. And they've got two new family-style options for you, including it's raining tacos, 12 shells, meat, toppings, rice, beans, chips, salsa for $35, served hot and ready to eat. John McClain is with us every Friday. Phone lines are open if you've got an NFL question for John McClain at 615-737-1045, 737-1045. And let's go to the phones. Joey will lead us off this segment with questions for John McClain. Joey, welcome in. You're on the Midday 180.
Hey, guys. So, John, I was just curious with Deshaun Watson and his quarterback coach kind of stirring up some trouble on Twitter this past week by saying that the Chicago Bears never talked to him or anything. I was just wondering, how much of a hornet's nest has that stirred up?
Nothing at all in Houston because we don't give a rat's you know what. But I tell you what, he tweeted that. And then I know Rich Eisen pulled up quotes in which Watson had mentioned Chicago in a list of teams. So we have been unable to talk to Watson since the playoff loss to Kansas City. At some point we will, and we'll ask him to clarify. Was he talking about a visit like he made to Houston and some other teams where he spent a day there? Or was he also including 15 minutes at the combine? But too many people came back and said the Bears talked to him, so we still don't know exactly what he meant, and he hasn't clarified.
Well, and John, we have John Feinstein on our show weekly, and it was his tweet that started the whole thing, and he was quoting Doug Williams from one of his books about race in the quarterback position. And then Doug Gottlieb of Fox Radio started going after John Feinstein, saying it was ridiculous. And that's where Deshaun Watson replied to Doug Gottlieb in that. And we asked John Feinstein about it, and he made it clear that he was quoting Doug Williams on it. But I believe Doug Williams has since backed off that statement of what he said about race playing an issue with Trubisky going second. So difficult to know exactly who to follow in this story with everything that was being said.
Well, I can tell you this, Doug Williams doesn't have a clue about what was going on in Chicago Bears front office with Ryan Pace when he made that deal. I was listening yesterday to scouting reports from Daniel Jeremiah and Lewis Riddick, and they were saying good things about Trubisky right before that draft, their scouting report. The big knock against him is he was a one-year starter. Well, now they take guys who are one-year starters, Dwayne Haskins being the most recent that I can think of. It's not that big of a deal, but I think a lot of times if you look at talent around Trubisky, he doesn't have as near as much talent as Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson have had around him. Now, I don't think, of course, he had been a success, and they obviously think that this could be probably going to be his last year there. But when you start talking about race, you know, that's one reason I stay away from that, because if you don't know it beyond a shadow of doubt, you ought to put a lid on it.
Pepper Rogers died. Bud Adams decided to link up with Pepper Rogers when the Titans were going to play in Memphis. Initially, they planned for two seasons. Obviously, it was such a failure, they reduced it to one. Did you deal with Pepper Rogers at all as the Oilers were heading out of town and setting up to play that year in Memphis?
My favorite Pepper Rogers story was, if you guys get Fisher on, he'll tell you this story, that one day, right in the middle of a training camp, and I don't know if it was the first one or second one, they told Fisher, by the way, pack it up, we're going to Memphis to Rhodes College. And Fisher's like, huh? What do you mean we're going to train? We're training here. No, Pepper's got to set up to train. I don't remember if it was a week or what, at Rhodes College. So they had to load everything up, and they're driving on the buses, and all of a sudden, oops, we got to stop. I think it was in Jackson. They had to pull off in Jackson because they had a band out, politicians and everything, and they had to get out and make speeches all because of Pepper. Pepper was very influential with Bud because Pepper was a great talker, former head coach, multiple college and pro teams, not in the NFL. And at the time, you guys know, he was a mover and a shaker in Memphis. And he was a character, too. And I didn't know him very well at all, but I heard great stories about him. When I talk about Pepper Rogers, that guy was a character.
I don't remember the timeline precisely, but Pepper reported directly to Bud. And then they, as they did often back then, they shuffled the organizational tree. And so John Glennon was covering the team for the commercial appeal then. And we were in the trailer, the press trailer, the ratty press trailer back at that Bellevue temporary facility. And so we had to make phone calls in front of each other all the time. So John calls Pepper Rogers to get Pepper Rogers' reaction to this announcement that reassigned Pepper Rogers where he was going to report to Don McLaughlin. This was where Don kind of consolidated some power, and Pepper was one of the people reassigned that was now going to report to Don instead of reporting to Bud. And so John tells Pepper this, and Pepper says, I don't know what you're talking about. I always have to do the accent.
Yeah, Pepper, it's the same accent for everyone, too. Yeah. It's great.
I don't know what you're talking about, John. I report to Bud. I've always reported to Bud. And John says, well, Pepper, I'm reading the press release here. It says that you now report to Don. And he says, well, I guess I report to Donnie then. I like Donnie. Donnie's a good guy.
The thing about the people that could tell the best Pepper Rogers stories would be Don McLaughlin and Steve Underwood, because they're behind the scenes stuff. And I know this, when Bud got Pepper involved, everybody was just rolling their eyes because they had enough to deal with in Nashville and trying to play in Memphis with Pepper having Bud's ear, which he did at the time.
John, Monday Night Football, changing over the booth again. Joe Tessitore, Booger McFarland now out. They're going to stay with ESPN. Reports are ESPN's going to stay in-house with this next hire. Steve Levy is the top name that we've heard for play-by-play. Dan Orlovsky, Lewis Riddick, some different names thrown out there for Monday Night Football. What's the best option in your mind in terms of where they should be looking, either in-house at ESPN or outside?
I like the two you mentioned, Orlovsky, who I got to know when he played here, and he was a really bad quarterback, and then Lewis Riddick. Riddick played for 7 seasons. He was a scout in personnel departments. So he comes from a player and a personnel man's perspective. Dan Orlovsky comes from a player's perspective. I think both of those guys are really good at what they do, which is analysis on studio shows, and I think they'd probably be pretty good on Monday Night Football. As for Steve Levy, he's been around there forever. You know, the guy you'd like to see do it would be Mike Tirico, but he's not, I guess he doesn't want to do it. But I got no issue with Steve Levy. I think that would be a good threesome. And a lot of people didn't like Booger McFarland. I did. I liked him. He had opinions, whether you liked it or not. When he was with the Buccaneers, he was a really good interview. Warren Sapp stole most of the headlines because he was the other tackle, but McFarland was good. Now they're going to put him in studio shows. He's still under contract. But I'd like to see Orlovsky and Riddick.
Lane, Houston Chronicle, joins us every Tuesday and Friday. Love getting John's insight, his stories, covering the league for as long as he has. And again, confirmed by Voice of the Titans' Mike Keith. And John wrote about it then. The Titans were going to be the pioneers had it not been for someone in Memphis breaking the story and Bud Adams changing course and naming them the Tennessee Titans. John, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.
Hey, Chad, Paul, thank you guys very much. I hope you stay safe and have a great weekend, you and all your listeners. Thank you.
Same to you. John McClain, every Tuesday and Friday on the show. Will Bowling, our Zone Media Insider, will join us to wrap up the week when we return. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
How have the Titans done at the NFL offseason? React to it with us.
Do you want some of that? Yes, you do.
Your official home of the Tennessee Titans. 104.5, The Zone.
And just like that, we have reached the end of another week. Social distancing shows. I'm coming to you live from Mount Juliet. Paul's in Brentwood. David Reed with a beautiful beard. Downtown Nashville in studio. It has been a fun week. And Paul, once again, we're one step closer to Jonathan Hutton returning on Monday, which is great news for everyone.
Last week during my furlough, I was able to change all of the batteries in my smoke alarms upstairs, but I didn't make it downstairs. And so this weekend, maybe even today, Chad, the ladder that is still up that I'm sure my wife detests me for every time she walks past it, I fully intend to deal with the downstairs smoke alarms in the next 3 days.
Paul's, what I'm hearing is in Paul's next furlough in the month of June, he's going to get to the downstairs smoke alarms. That's the next break you're going to have to do that.
Next 3 days.
I'll be amazed if that actually happens. Will Bowling, he is the digital content director for 104.5 The Zone.
Young Will Bowling. He had on his do not disturb when David Reed first called him. Who are you trying to avoid, Will?
I was trying to avoid text message bings in my ears while I was on with you guys. I didn't know that affected Skype calls, too. I thought it was just text messages and calls.
Live and learn.
Okay. Yeah. So Will has become our official Midday 180, 104.5 The Zone media insider. So we have him on to close out the week and kind of give us the latest on Midday 180 On Demand and what's on the podcast page, what people are listening to, what maybe people need to listen to more often over the weekend. But first, Will has been a part of, I think, all of our Midday mixers so far as the digital content director of The Zone. Will, executive. I thought last night's was very productive.
It was
a little bit different, but it was like a productive focus group, I thought, with the mixer last night. Your thoughts on it?
It was productive because at the end, everyone complained about what they wanted to have in the mixer that they didn't actually have, which was a change from the other ones. But you guys have – it's been fun. That's the most social I've been with anyone is just on the Midday Mixer. So I look forward to actually seeing other faces other than my own looking back in the mirror.
You got to flaunt your title too, which I pointed out to everyone. Tell us your full title, because Chad botched it.
My title changes every time I talk to anyone at the station, but I go with digital executive producer because a boss called me that once, and I remember you got mad because you were complaining that I got an executive in my title before you did, which is just tough to hear. But
I think executive digital director sounds better than digital executive director.
I'm open to any and all that includes executive in the title. Let's make me a little older. Chad has said I look 12 since I started the station. We're going for 16 to 17. Baby steps.
Yeah, executive will get you there.
Will Boland, he looks 12. He sounds 18. And he's an executive already. He's like the Doogie Howser of radio executives and digital content executives also. Yeah, it was funny last night at the and not sharing too much in the Circle of Trust, but with people just saying, I wish Kirby was in here tonight, or I wish Ryan Mudd was in here. And I'm thinking, is there any other way in which we've completely failed you guys in every way for this last 2.5 hours that we spent with you when we don't have to on a weeknight?
I was responsible for the special guest. I was shooting much higher, and I had someone big arranged, and then he had child bedtime issues and had to back out. So I disappointed them all. I told them who it was, and they seemed especially disappointed after he couldn't join us, but it gave us more quality time together. So listen, life is filled with disappointments. I got these people more ready for further ones in life.
Yeah. You were teaching us all a lesson. Yeah.
Yes. But Paul, the teacher of lessons every week on the Midday Mixer and every week on this show. Will, tell us what's happening on the podcast page this week in terms of hours people are listening to, interviews that are getting a lot of traction, and maybe something that you heard this week that you want more people to download over the weekend.
Yeah, so you guys, as of this morning, have eclipsed the 100,000 download mark for the month of May.
Right.
So that is done. 103,462. We're going to go to the ones of downloads this month. Top episode of the month is still the first Friday of the month, May 1st, Hour 3. That was Austin Price, Stephen Godfrey, and I believe John McClain was in that segment as well, or that hour as well, which is a solid trio. John McClain last Friday with Steve Underwood. That's the second highest podcast this month. And then Chad, your Twitter beef with Nashville Severe Weather is the third highest podcast this month, which is impressive. It's already that high considering it hasn't been out that long. This week, 31,000 downloads. Hour 4 of Monday's show was number one. Getting into the weather mob, a deep dive into the schedule. Paul criticizing Chad for his mic placement. That segment is second this week. That also included John McClain on Tuesday. And then Primary Complaint Wednesday is the number three podcast for this week, which gets you to just over 30,000 downloads this week.
And I think David is still working on yesterday's conversation about least favorite first names, which Chad and I were very fond of that conversation. I think David's intention is to get that out today. And I think that will do quite well, except for people named Ricky, Randy, and Brittany.
Yeah,
that one will do well. And honestly, y'all's top podcasts are usually you guys just talking, being yourselves and having primary complaint kinds of conversations and stuff like that. So I would fully expect that to perform very well.
People have such good taste. That's really quite remarkable.
It's confirmed every week when we look at the podcast numbers, just the great taste of the listeners and the people of Music City and the surrounding areas. And I'm also getting word that while my beef with Nashville Severe Weather is third for the month amongst all of our listeners, it's number one amongst the weather crowd. Or as yes. Alan Bell called them, the Weather Branch Davidians, that came after me on Twitter, which is one of the smartest, funniest things I've read in a while, said that he still can't get over the Weather Branch Davidians that refused to hear one lone criticism about Nashville Severe Weather.
But my sources can confirm that that is true. I don't know the exact percentage of weather people that you've pissed off in the past week, but I can say that it is very high. That's for sure.
Will Bowling, he's an executive of some sort. He runs all the digital content for 104.5 The Zone. He does a great job when he hosts as well. Will, you've got podcast up. You worked hard on new logos for all the podcasts this week also, so good job with that. And plug your podcast for the people as well.
Yeah, I have a new Ultimate Tennessee podcast up with Ben McKee, co-host of the Swain event up in Knoxville, talking about the recruiting push. We're going to have another one coming out next week, so look out for that as well, wherever you get your podcasts. But lots of new stuff coming and new logos. We have put a fresh coat of paint on everything. I've probably spent more time watching YouTube tutorials on how to use Photoshop than I have actual shows in the past couple of weeks, but that's all right.
Some people have lost their wallet as they try to get new art for you.
Look, I cannot be blamed for you being irresponsible with your wallet. That is your fault and your fault alone. I sent you a picture you could have used. You insist on using your own, and it's fine. It's okay. It's different.
Will, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks for the update. Thanks to everyone out there for listening. Big thanks to David Reed for a great week of work as well. Jonathan Hutton returns on Monday. As we say goodbye for the week and send it over to 3HL, Paul, please, a message for the people.
First, Chad, I'd like to wish you a very happy week with no payment next week. Enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. And while you're away, do not lock the box. And do lock the lock. See you.